In this podcast, we're going to gently walk through a evening experience of mine. That's the last night I went to see the Penrith Symphony Orchestra. So in Australia, there's Sydney, and away from good-looking Sydney, there's Western Sydney. So it's the sort of flat plains before you reach the beautiful Blue Mountains, and there's a lot of people there. It's a sort of a large industrial area at Western Sydney, and in there is a concert hall, basically a box-shaped concert hall. You've got the Sydney Opera House, but this is basically a square building. It's sort of nice on the outside, but essentially it's a square building, rectangular building, should I say, and inside there's a concert. And in this podcast, we're just going to quietly go through some of the experiences I had going to this evening. It's not necessarily a review. You'll see some reactions or hear some reactions I had to some music. Moreover, how the music was contained as I went up there. And eventually, to the overall reaction to the overall space. In the overall space, there in the foyer, they had interestingly, the local science group from the Western Sydney University. This is one of the many universities which has sprung up in New South Wales. And they have a science outreach, and they had a origami DNA display. So there's this infiltration on different levels. There's the people who are not very interested in and just come in, move out, and there's people like me, or there's a growing number of people who are into explanations. And this is a little bit of a story here. This is Peter Hill Explains, and in this podcast I want to slow down the rate of speaking and slow down the concepts one by one. So there's nothing, no hard concepts. I realize that if I talk about a concept and then start to talk about an equation, that's just too much, too fast for a majority of people. Just to say, I am in cardiac rehab and just loosening up my cognitive arrangement, sort of getting things out of the filing system, improving the ability to speak coherently without break into podcasts, getting ready for that and starting to think of some of the other things like the productions or the listenability to it all. So as I sort of get things cognitively sorted out in my head, I realize, oh, look, there's all these nuances and complexities. So I often launch into explaining things, say, recently, like a pendulum and sound and stuff like that, the very intense version of that. There's so many different aspects to go and so many nuances that you can choose a simple explanation or a simple demonstration. But that simple demonstration can mislead people, get people caught up as you unpack it. And majority of people don't even see this. They just give a demonstration, go on, and then they don't really harvest the group of confused people that they leave behind. So that's the packaging for it. So this happened, we got there in our little jazz, coming down from the escarpment of the Blue Mountains, around 300 metres down to 30 metres in Penrith, the Jones Sutherland Centre. So Penrith is an area, it used to be a rural outpost of Sydney, just before it hits. It's at the very extremity of Sydney. If you were actually outside Sydney, you cross the boundary from the Blue Mountains into Sydney, as we drive down 13 kilometres, the roads up there. There's the Western Highway, and then we hook off the highway along Mulgoa Road along the Nepean River. You can't see the Nepean River. It's a large floodplain, and there's various floodproof businesses built there, and a large rugby complex that you drive past, and you drive into the Joan Sutherland Centre in the Penrith Centre. There's a Westfield shopping centre, which in one of these commercial deals, they built the shopping centre and built the new council chambers. And with a grant from 1988, which is Australia's bicentenary of white occupation, that's when Captain Cook came in 1770 in a little boat all the way from England, travelling down the Atlantic Ocean around the stormy seas at the very bottom of South America up to Tahiti to look at the solar eclipse, and then unopened secret orders to go out and investigate southern land. So he did a very good job of New Zealand, which he encountered first, and then moved further across and mapped the east coast of Australia in 1770. But in 1788, a Royal Navy escorted 9 ships of convicts, and having landing roughly 1,000 people. And to celebrate that auspicious occasion, 200 years later, things began to move in Penrith. They had their first local symphony orchestra. There was a composer who had been from the area, who'd come back, not composer, conductor, come back and started the orchestra. And in fact, there were, I think, two people who were playing the original orchestra in 1988 were playing again in 2018, some 30 years later. So we found a park. I'm not going to talk too much about it. There's a library council car park that was full, and so we had to make our way to the back. There's another car park behind the shops, which we had to go to. It's always the important thing is Penrith is changing a lot because they're putting up a lot of apartment blocks, very high rise. Well, we consider it high rise, 6 stories all around the station. Part of a vision for increasing the population holding of Australia. So Australia's population is booming at the moment, and these apartments are going up, and people are saying, "Oh, they look a bit." Our term is for flash, square, boring might be it, but there's the under comment is that they're not really built very well. They look nice, well, but in 30 years' time, they're not going to be as strong as the other more down to earth apartments, which have stood the test of time. Yes, we're not going to go into that. So we went into the centre, Grand Southern Centre. So it's basically a shoebox affair. And so there's the long side of the shoebox, which is glassed in, and you walk through there, buy our tickets. We got ushered up into the gallery. So we had to enter near the orchestra because for some reason, at the top level, so it's basically a 3-story building, I would assume. But there's 2 stories of the bottom ground floor and first floor of access to this concert hall. So the basic concert hall is it's not like a lecture theatre. It's the width of the stage back and up with a few galleries on the outside, which the galleries sit around the outside. So we went up to the gallery, the dark gallery, and that's my family, or my 2 small children, a 10-year-old, and I suppose she's 13 years now, 11 and 13. I sat next to a few people. I won't, for their privacy, won't talk about it, but we were actually behind 90 degrees from the actual orchestra. So if you've got 0 degrees out in front of the orchestra where most normal people sit, we were sitting up behind it, and it was absolutely full because it was the 30th anniversary one, and also the youth orchestra, Penrith Youth Strings, was or also playing. So there's a general feeling to try and, I suppose, manoeuvre around a sort of a lack of support for arts and sciences. The different groups are working together, like the musicians and scientists are working together, and the youth development were all working together. So the Penrith Symphony Orchestra works in with the conductors and people actually work in developing the youth. I say that because a few of my students were, I said hello to a few of my students I hadn't seen for a year because I've been in cardiac rehab for that amount of time. And so some of my students were actually playing down later on in the concert. So you might say, I'm out here in podcast land. I want to listen to. If I can't listen to the music itself, at least I want to listen to someone describe the significance of it. I'll just go through the actual. So it's a symphony orchestra, not going to be playing rock. So the first music was Johann Strauss. The second, the Emperor's Waltz. And it was played, I'm not going to do it, but you would recognize it. It goes, da, 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 da. I can't pronounce it all that well. And, of course, it's obviously live music, which is very much different from what you, I suppose you can hear it in your headphones, but it's particularly closing your eyes, the actual different instruments come from different locations, and you can hear there's something about live music. So it was a very well professionally completed. Up high with any of recordings I listen to. I'm not a music enthusiast, and you'll hear from my commentary later on. After that, there was this interesting time where the conductor began to give us a detailed lecture on Johann Strauss and the emperors, who he's doing for, and the various succession wars in Austria and Australia. Sorry, in Germany, and this was because. People were moving in heaps of chairs and rearranging it because after this one, the orchestra, it was the youth orchestra and strings coming out, the Penrith String Orchestra, which is their youth orchestra. And they were all preparing. So to fill in time, he gave us a first lecture, which I found rather interesting because there's heaps of things I didn't know. I didn't know that there was two Johann Strausses, their dad, who did sort of pop, who's like a pop musician doing waltz, and Johann, who was doing official court music. So there'd be an occasion when various people were getting married or various, for things, the Emperor Waltz. The story about this is how the Holy Roman Empire was going through various, the actual emperor aspect of the Holy Roman Empire, and who was an emperor and who was Kaiser, and how there were two Kaisers, and how that had to be changed diplomatically to make everyone happy, and then I think the final exiled Kaiser, who was exiled after World War One, died in 1941 when he was caught by the Germans. It's a bit hard when the Germans came into the land. So he was exiled. So you got all this detailed information. I think that was interesting for me because it was me and various people. The audience picking up this detailed information, so it might amuse you to hear these Aussies going down to a shoebox listening to some music, which is damn fine music if I say so myself, but then the actual context being lectured and explained. And then next to it we heard two titled world premieres by local composers. So the first one was something called Land, Sea and Sky. So this is the second piece of music, Land, Sea and Sky, and that was composed by Christina Green. And musically, after the clarity, the students were absolutely faultless. It was fantastic music from the students, from the strings, but it lacked, for me, the clarity of your composers, the sort of classic composers. And the, I suppose the interesting thing there is that, people are reconstructing ideas, and particularly like me, podcasting, reconstructing ideas. Too many ideas come in too quickly. And if you read the biography of the Sina Green, so these are all Australian composers from harking from such famous places as Wollongong or Penrith. But they're quite. Amazing people. So I was trying to think about the actual composers, but this particular composer is combining just a whole heap of different styles together involved. And like if your ear can pick up the different styles and they're all mixed together, it's very hard to actually include. So there's classical music, minimalism, jazz, folk styles, rock styles, all these different styles coming in. Like it didn't come across like that. It was quite a pleasant piece to listen to and try and actually figure out what it means. Now, this is very much different. In that, said the Emperor Waltz, that was for an occasion. Everyone knew what it was and had a certain set of expectations for what waltzes were. So when you're composing a cross, it's a difficult thing when the listener is trying to actually clue in what's happening, or imagine what's happening, or analyze it, deconstruct it as they're hearing it, and you're not all that sure. You just walk in and listen to it. So you're not all that sure what to listen to. I think you probably have to listen to it once or twice. Then there was a second piece called by a relatively young composer, another world premiere from the first section, and it was called The Unknown Journey, and it was composed by this composer as a response to her trip to Auschwitz in Poland, and she has so this is fairly you're trying to listen to it, obviously you can't pick up the nuances of everything she was thinking, so you're listening to it, and so the first part of it is the anxiety and suspense of being put on the train. This I am not making this up. And then a solemn, mysterious portent as actually in Auschwitz itself. It's a sort of a very unusual, unusual piece. But again, purely from strings. If you're trying to do something on strings, it's very hard to pick up what's going on. So that completed, and then they had another lecture from the composer, not from the composer, from the conductor. So it's the same conductor doing all this. I think there's only one major conductor in this region. So he conducted them and then went on to... So that's an unusual thing, a musical piece dedicated to Auschwitz. I'm trying to deconstruct that. And again, I'll probably have to listen to it once or twice to actually pick it up. So when you first hear it from this particular direction, it's hard to pick it up. Next one was the 1912 Overture, which was, again, interesting because we got a lecture halfway through it, or as they were taking out the chairs and things for the youth to rebuild the symphony orchestra, and this is the 1912 Overture. And we got, again, a lecture, and again, it was intensely interesting about Tchaikovsky, and again, how he was constructing, he was a bit distracted, constructed and built it in, wrote it in a week. It's as commissioned for a particular commemoration. It's an anniversary of 1812 Overture. This is the Overture to mark the defeat of the French. And essentially, it was discussed that the French won a victory of Bordello outside Moscow, occupied Moscow, but the Russians just retreated and the French perished due to starvation in Moscow. There were other facts offered that of the various components, La Marseillaise and God Save the Tsar, which were sort of popular tunes added into the overture, which I suppose is a bit, when I come to think of it, it's a bit Andrew Lloyd Webberish in terms of, but you know, there are various themes used again. But it was a remark that a particular person had done their research and had researched about the various bits and pieces, and Napoleon had banned the La Marseillaise in 1805 because when he emperor. And so people, look, I don't know whether the general people, I certainly didn't know the very details of the French Revolution until I began to study Lamarck. So interesting about your so they were anachronistic, there was actual themes, which was a reconstruction. So I found that interesting in that if something, a reconstruction is sufficiently old, we can't actually differentiate it from the actual time. Because it's in the past, we assume it's actually correct. So that's an interesting thing. I should say we have a festival out here back in the mountains in Lithgow called Iron Fest. And it's a complete hodgepodge of every military Star Wars robots, tanks, and there's a complete French Napoleonic French army. When I say French army, say 60 or 100 people in a tents with the flags and dragoons going around, female dragoons, so that they look a bit different when they actually ride in the horse. I don't know, you can actually just spot it, and it's quite an event. So there's a sort of general knowledge. It's people faithfully recreate it. So often classic pictures of the Napoleonic army, and with the smoke coming up and drones going overhead. That is. Artificial drones are flown overhead so it can be filmed at the time, and then afterwards they're out having a drink and resting with stormtroopers from the Star Wars army. And it's sort of a beautiful thing to see. And this actually goes to the very heart of reconstruction. So we're left here at the construction. It's sort of the looking in on a similar level to the 1812 Overture. I'm sure we'll get to the end of this pretty soon. Hope this is entertaining and easier to follow. So I'm just to cap off again, it's just a reconstruction, blow-by-blow recount. Not a review, more a recount of going to a concert in Australia. Maybe a bit different. Maybe a bit different, and sort of memorizing or going back to how we reconstruct things out here, and how we sort of take history from different parts, and there's all people at different levels, and this conductor filling in time, giving us a lecture while the chairs are moved in behind. It's all professionally done, and so it clues you up in ahead. And I suppose for me, it means that I sort of listen to the Marseillaise a bit more, and the various points. And there's the just a remark that they're doing something for the cannon fire, because it's inside. They can't normally get cannon fire. They usually get some sort of, if they're doing it outside the 1812, they do try and get some cannon fire to go involved. I suppose I'm not all. It's nowadays it would be increasingly difficult to actually get authorization to do this. But the interesting thing is that the actual, reading through it, they, with all this anachronism, they selected to digitally resample a recording of cannon fire from a 1958 American 1812 overture. Let's see if I can read what it is. Minneapolis Symphony Orchestra. Now, this sort of would seem rather strange that, for cannon fire, there's been a lot of cannon fire there, but why would you sample? Not a real cannon. Well, it turned out to be a real cannon, because the Minneapolis Symphony Orchestra in 1958 got an original 1775 cannon. So this is before the French Revolution. It was owned by the Louis, but it was used by repurposed, retasked by Napoleon, and that was an original Napoleonic cannon, and which is sort of quite sort of head scratching that you'd want to actually try and get a real, obviously hear a bang and say, oh, that's like a real cannon that I would have heard, which I suppose is an era cannon. But if you really look into it, I think it was the Russian cannons firing, not the French cannons firing, to go through it. It strikes me it's one of those things where you unpack it a bit too much and you wind up being a little bit confused. Around here, there was a down again in Penrith, there's the Lennon's Brothers Circus, and they have a there's one of the acts. They have this sphere, sort of wire sphere, about a story and a half tall, and a little door in it, and you can see in the inside. And these little, there's a relevant story to it. There's you get these little motorcycle people riding in little circles, and they just do loop the loops, missing each other. And I sort of like don't like watching industrial accidents just before they're going to happen. But it was announced as the death-defying Dome of Death, and so you just, it was just great in terms of the actual contradiction to it. So there was interval, and the next music was called Homage to Liszt, Liszt, a Hungarian. Everyone knows who he is, but probably have heard various pieces. And this was by this pianist who's the local, I forgot what they call virtuoso. Well, no, virtuoso is for violin. I don't know what they call for a great. So he is very, very good. Like in terms of, like I can barely do chopsticks on a piano, and but he can actually just hit so many notes. It's mind-boggling. And and his homage to Liszt is sort of a, it's not Liszt. It's got some sort of combination of it, but when you actually go into it, so it's incredibly fast, music, and so which is really rather hard. If you know the Moonlight Sonata, there's something about the individual notes hitting there. So if you go far too fast, it's really hard to actually distinguish what's going through if there comes a lot. But this is a piece that he's composed himself, which is sort of very showy, sort of the, like, you, if Litz broke the note barrier, he was going at twice the rate. And reading what he said about his composition, it was a piano percussion piece, and he was only one person there. So he said that he was introducing some themes which Litz, from after Litz, that Litz would find surprising, but it's a great homage to him. And so just ear-wise, I was really trying to look it up, and part of the percussion stopped when he actually playing through it began to thump the piano with his other hand. And so it's going so fast, and this thumping was, you know, I don't know, you calibrate it to try and pick up information. And so you had piano thumping. So that was interesting. And for the final piece was Rachmaninoff. And again, he is a good pianist, or a good composer. And that contrasted with, so the same pianist, but now that was a solo piano slash percussion at high speed, and technically fantastic. It's just mentally, it was just a bit much for me to actually pick up. Then the piano concerto by Rachmaninoff, and again here you just really restraint of the piano and different pieces coming together. Obviously, talking about Rachmaninoff, can't give you any of the feeling of what it was. A very high quality indeed. And so that concluded the evening, and there was a I wish I could remember the piece that they finished off. There was a sort of a show stopping piece. I can't remember it. And balloons coming down to your happy 30th birthday, and requisite, you know, flowers given to the innocent composer and stuff like that. And then we left. On leaving, I couldn't help noticing just some pamphlets out from the science. That's what it's to go through all this craziness. There was science, and then there was a DNA, origami DNA folding sheets of paper on the outside, and I immediately stopped and picked it up and tried to understand what the local science group was going in. So they had a four-part, well-funded series, and this DNA, old origami DNA, had these lateral folds, which led to a natural spiral. But this was unbelievably good. They had the molecular bonds for AT and GC lined up, and it was folded with a fold on the outside, a rim fold on the outside, to see the sugar and phosphate. So this is at the end of this very unusual, intense with new compositions coming in, and lectures in the middle of it, and this at the very end. And then I went home, and indeed there is the information that I picked up from the conductor someone who was into research, was in fact pretty much lifted straight out of Wikipedia. Okay. And put into context, which is very good. Again, the origami stuff was said, oh, this is an original by this particular doctor from Utah. I had not seen anything quite like it, quite so just compelling in terms of education, accuracy, and stuff like that. And indeed, it is. It's not the original, but it is the best and most improved, and so I should put a link to it to it there. And so that just capped off the evening with sort of unusual stuff. And I think I tried to put some of my comments at certain points that I had found. So the homage to Litz was mentally confusing because it didn't have the stuff that I'm used to listening with Litz. It had some elements, it was recognisable. And there was other things which I couldn't comprehend, like the percussion of slapping the piano and certain aspects of it, and indeed the actual composed the homage to it. So it's like the best of a tribute. We should say a tribute. It's sort of like singing ABBA, but yeah, an ABBA tribute, but adding your own so riffs, you know, AC/DC riffs that I would have been surprised to listen to. That's not as bad as that, but the important thing is that I suppose when I tried to say, look, I have some, actually the person next to me said, oh, look, I haven't heard slap the grand piano before. But so when I said that, I was quickly shouted down saying, oh, look, it's Litz. I'm not pronouncing it properly. That's some interesting aspects. So I hope you enjoy listening to this. This is a more sane podcast without any equations, without any constructs. You're just listening along to my life, in which there's sort of two Australias. There's the Barbie Australia, where you just turn up and go along, and then there's another Australia where we're just reconstructing world history and culture and stuff like that, and getting a bit confused along the way. Thanks for listening.